You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. And once again, it is time for your daily dose of recovery, brought to you by David. For today's episode, let's talk about video games. This form of entertainment began as a few boxy pixels on a green computer screen, and over the past 5 decades has evolved into an industry that supports multiple games with production budgets that rival major motion pictures. These big-budget games have fully developed scripts and employ professional actors to portray cutscenes using motion capture technology. The success of such video games has led to the industry having their own awards season that in certain circles is more popular than the Oscars. Recently, many of the award-winning games are being made into live-action versions, such as HBO's production of The Last of Us. Though, to be fair, making a popular video game into a movie or TV show is not exactly something new, and has had varying degrees of success and disaster over the years. The Mortal Kombat films pop to mind, or the live-action version of Super Mario Bros. Where they traveled to an alternate dimension where dinosaurs evolved to look just like us, for some reason. Yeah, that one was odd. Now, please understand, I'm all in favor of video games being made into films or television shows. I'm looking forward to a live-action version of the Norse mythology editions of God of War, and I'm really hoping that the success of Nintendo and Illumination's collaboration on the new Super Mario Bros. Film results in other Nintendo titles being produced. I would love to see Metroid or The Legend of Zelda made into films or possibly as TV shows like the aforementioned Last of Us. Though, now I'm wondering if live action would be better suited to the more action-oriented Metroid and Zelda franchises rather than CGI animation. Still, the success of the Super Mario Bros. Film has many critics claiming that a Nintendo cinematic universe is on the horizon, because, you know, everyone wants to emulate the success of the Marvel cinematic universe. Like many millennials, my childhood saw the launch of the home entertainment systems of Nintendo, Atari, and Sega. So I have a history with video games that stretches back through my entire life. It is perhaps the only relationship, other than with family members, that stretches as far back through my life as my addiction does. In fact, it is fair to say that video games played a significant role in the growth of my compulsive eating habits, as the many hours I spent playing them contributed to my self-isolation. But my relationship with video games didn't begin with a Nintendo Entertainment System given to my brother and I as a Christmas gift. No, my introduction came through the big, bulky machines in arcades. Nowadays, when we think of arcades, we probably imagine something like Boomers, a large recreational establishment that includes miniature golf, maybe a batting cage, a small food court overwhelming with smells. And the arcade itself is there, but it's well lit, has lots of neon colors crisscrossing the pasty white walls. It's an arena of children running, machines beeping, lights flashing. The modern arcade emulates the atmosphere of a Las Vegas casino, minus the cigarette smoke, while still retaining the parents who weep over the money being removed from their wallets. But this was not always so. Come with me now, back to the 1980s, when arcades were dark places set aside in the corner of the mall, hidden back away from the crowds. When my family walked by the arcade during our Saturday afternoon shopping, my mother would hold my hand tight and pull me away from it. "No, no," she'd admonish me. "It's not safe in there. That's where the bad kids are. in the dark, in the black lights, doing who knows what. Of course, being young boys, my brother and I found our mother's warnings and suspicious attitude to be highly enticing, and the arcade had a calling allure, inviting us to enter the dark, to follow that purple-black light glow emanating from the small doorway. "There are video games in here," called the voice. "Come, little children, test your skills. It will only cost you a quarter." I don't know about the rest of you, but when I was a kid, a quarter was a special thing. It was the biggest of the coins to be found floating around the house, which made it easy to recognize. In a way, a quarter was so much more powerful than a dollar bill. In fact, when you went into the arcade, you had to insert dollar bills into a machine and turn them into quarters so you could play. And the games in the arcades were not like the entertainment consoles available for private ownership. No, these were big, bulky devices with comic book-style artwork on the sides, and they had elaborate controls that required you to step up and lean into each movement. For those of us who were younger, we had to get one of those black rubber steps to climb up on so we could reach the controls. Sometimes you were alone in the arcade, just you and the gray t-shirt you wore because you wanted it to light up beneath the black lights. Other times there was a crowd of kids and you had to wait your turn after you put your quarter up. When you clicked that little metal disc against the game's dashboard, you were announcing to everyone, "Yes, I have my quarter, and I am next in line to play this game." My favorite game in the arcade at the mall was Star Wars. Originally released on May 5th, 1983, the arcade game let you pilot an X-Wing fighter. But you weren't just any pilot. No. You stepped into the role of Red 5, Luke Skywalker himself, as you attack the Death Star. It was a colorful game that looked nothing like the movies because it was basically a wireframe outline of your ship and the enemy TIE fighters. When the TIE fighters shot at you, or when you shot back, the sound effects were not accurate, but it did have voice lines from the original movie. And when you heard Darth Vader say, "The Force is strong with this one," or Han Solo shout, "Yahoo! You're all clear, kid!" then you knew it was time to point your target cursor down and fire like a maniac at the exhaust port. No matter how many times you blew up the Death Star, there was always the next level, because like many arcade games, the objective is to run up a high score. But what made this game so special, beyond the fact that it was fun, and that it was Star Wars, was that when you lost, you heard Obi-Wan tell you, "Remember, the Force will be with you, always." And it didn't matter that the audio was spliced badly. That was Obi-Wan, and him saying that line just made the fact that you ran out of shields and got blown up somehow okay. That was a quarter well spent. Every single time, even though you were always destined to lose after blowing up 3 or 4 Death Stars. But it's time to leave these memories of days gone by and return to the present, where video games are in computers and gaming consoles. Today's gamers don't go to the corner slot in the mall because most of them game online with their friends. But I can't help but feel that they are missing out on something by not putting down their wireless controller, taking off their headsets, and instead stepping up to an oversized arcade game in a black light room that their mothers warned them to stay away from. As you can tell, I have a great fondness for video games. They have been a part of my life for years, but, as I previously alluded to, video games have played a role in the development of my character defects and addictive behaviors. But I'm not specifically picking on video games. Rather, I am pointing out what many of us already know and have been experiencing for years, that the increasing amounts of electronic devices in our lives have dangerous negative effects. In many ways, technology has made it so easy for people to communicate and interact from anywhere in the world. You can get a video call through your phone. You can send emails rather than rely on the post office. And text messaging allows for instantaneous communication without having to overcome the burden of dialing a phone number. Though, speaking for myself, I still prefer a phone call. Yet, I have had it explained to me by past girlfriends just how important regular texting throughout the week is to the relationship. Which still sounds odd to me, in all honesty, but we do what we can for the people we care about, right? Anyway, getting back on point, video games have drastically advanced from the era of 8-bit and 16-bits. They've improved graphics and storytelling due to increased memory and processing speeds, leading to more complex games. And there has been a parallel development of making the gamers grind more for the progression. Look at any MMORPG, and you'll see people repeating what amounts to essentially the same three quest types over and over, slowly building up the quality of their gear. And this increasing demand, in my opinion, enables self-isolation. Video games keep people in their homes, and many parents see this as a good thing because it keeps their kids out of trouble. Around when Nintendo released the N64, my daily habits in the afternoons on weekdays and the entire day on the weekends were occupied with playing video games rather than going outside to play, as I had previously done throughout my childhood. This repeating pattern, day after day, interrupted and replaced socializing that might have happened if I had been encouraged to interact with people my age rather than be in front of a screen. Plus, video games are entertaining and helped keep me from feeling lonely since I was spending a lot of my time by myself after school. Years later, as a graduate student, I found myself rushing home from classes, completing my studying, and then hopping on my computer to log into an MMORPG. And then, I would play until exhaustion took hold. And this high level of inactivity contributed to weight gain. Looking back, I don't exactly regret playing video games, but I do regret playing for such an extended amount of time. I remember one night when I was 28 years old, it suddenly hit me how much time I was devoting to online gaming. And while there is an argument to be made for socializing through the internet, recently one of my students put it very plainly. He said, "People you game with online are your buddies, not your friends." Which to me is an interesting distinction. So yes, back then, playing video games did help combat loneliness, but at the same time, it was enabling my isolation, fostering character defects, and driving me to compulsively overeat. After having this, "What am I doing with my time?" epiphany, the next day I decided to step away from MMORPGs in favor of living more in the real world, as gamers would say. I signed up for a gym membership and began pursuing other hobbies that required in-person interactions. For the next couple of years, I had great success at losing weight through sheer will of force and obsessive amounts of exercise. And while that success did not last, I continued to strive for less time playing video games. Yet, over the years, there have been times when I've returned to unhealthy levels of gaming. During the recent pandemic comes to mind. And whenever I started to slide back and play too much, I felt my overall mindset and emotional wellness beginning to slip towards a darker mood, where my thinking became circular and self-deprecating. Now, I'm not saying that I had a video game addiction, nor am I denying that other people can have such an addiction. I am simply pointing out that too much time devoted to video games is a trigger for my compulsions. So over the last 3 years that I've been working my program, I have remained vigilant in curtailing the amount of time I spend on screens. Whether it is playing a video game, watching a movie or a TV show, or working on a writing project. I know myself, and I know it is important to stand up and walk away from electronic devices. This is a responsibility that is becoming more common amongst all of us, across all age groups, in this ever-increasing technological world that we live in. Yet video games have also had a role in keeping me on the more righteous path. From time to time, there are nights when there are no more meetings, and everyone I know for outreach has gone to sleep. I've used all the tools of recovery for that day. I've done my journaling, I've done my meditation, I've read the daily readers, and yet I am still feeling that pull towards my compulsions. It's a night when I can't sleep because my mind is just rolling with thoughts and feelings. At such times, rather than turn to my compulsions and enact character defects, I turn to video games, just to keep myself busy, just to give my mind something else to focus on. Remember, our program is threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. And it is that middle one, the emotional level, that can stoke the fires of compulsion to fierce levels. And I have found that my best way to fight back is to turn my attention elsewhere. For those of you who have read the 12 and 12, you know that step 8's spiritual principle is self-discipline. Self-discipline is the ability to control one's feelings and overcome one's weaknesses, and to pursue what one thinks is right despite temptations to abandon it. In other words, self-discipline is essential in order to enact and live up to our living amends to ourself and other people. The 12 and 12 further defines what it means to make an amends in the chapter about step 9. Quote, "In making an amends, we need to acknowledge the specific harm we've done, apologize, make appropriate restitution, and change our behavior." End quote. I will elaborate more fully on how I made amends to myself in episode 17 next month, but for now, I'll just share that part of my amends to myself was to get out of the house every day, be in the sunlight, and not begin my day with video games or TV shows. No, those recreations must wait until everything else is done, and even then, I will only play a video game for an hour at most before I stop, because that's the discipline that I require to live a healthier life. I have to say, short gaming sessions make me feel like I'm reaching back through time to my childhood, to that doorway in the mall that emanated the purple glow of black lights, marking the way to arcade games and the rattle of quarters slipping into the machines. With so many of the old video games from back then now available in digital collections and through streaming services, I can return to the past and breathe in the nostalgia with my eyes and ears. But now I have self-discipline to keep me from overdoing it. I'm like a visitor, enjoying the games while not feeling a dependency for them. Because while it is a delight to visit the blacklight glow of years gone by, I still much prefer the sunlight and greenery of the here and now. And over the years, there are many games that I have yet to play. Currently, I'm working my way through a number of the Legend of Zelda games. First, I finished the Minish Cap. Now I'm playing the Switch version of Link's Awakening. Next, I'll finally play the Twilight Princess. But I'll only play a little here and a little there. At the end of the day, whether things went well or were challenging, I go home to the silence of an empty house. The program promises us all freedom from our compulsions, so I don't have to feel sad about going home to silence. I don't have to berate and despair and beat myself up. I can give thanks for the wonderful day, eat my meals that comply with my food plan, and tomorrow have another good day that continues to advance me towards my goals. And yes, I can enjoy video games again without losing myself in them, without chasing an illusionary joy that they provide in place of real happiness, because I believe in me, and I am no longer at the mercy of my disease and the isolation it tries to keep me in. You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to tune in on Mondays for episodes of Recovery Buddies with David, and check back on Thursdays for future episodes of Daily Dose of Recovery here on HP3R.